Better turn the tape too. It is a great pity that the world has become so accustomed to the piled-up tales of horror that it no longer has any sensibilities left to feel the shame and degradation of these things. From the days of Belgium onward, all races in Europe have suffered, and by sympathy, all races in America have suffered with them. Though it is a fact that we hear more, far more, about the sufferings of the Jews than of any other people. There is, however, this reaction of the practical mind: why do these things occur? Grant that robberies, assaults, and murders described in the complaint have occurred, why should they occur? Are the Polish people naturally given to perpetrating such acts? Have such acts marked the residence of the Jews in Poland for the last 800 years? And if the Polish people are not naturally abusive, if the story of the Jews' residence in Poland has been mostly pleasant, what causes the change now? That is the way the practical general mind works. It seeks to know the background. Mr. Morgenthau, apparently, put in too much of this background, though at that he put in very much less than the other investigators, except Mr. Samuel. Therefore, Mr. Morgenthau's report was pigeonholed by American Jewry, because the facts make very poor material for the kind of propaganda which American Jewish leaders had in mind. Apparently, they did not dare publicly to criticize or renounce his report. They simply passed it over.
You see, you have to keep in mind, and this is something you won't have had yet, that this committee, if you will, Mr. Morgenthau, Samuels, etc., Captain Wright, were sent over to look into the claims. And none of them could find anything. So these are bits of the report that pretty soon they just totally got buried. But for some reason, they disliked Morgenthau's the most.
Captain Wright, who endeavored to put in all the background he could find to make Polish conditions comprehensible to the British people, has been handled insultingly by the Jewish press. They don't want investigation. They want sympathy for themselves and denunciation for the Poles. In America, we are inclined to believe that every condition is explainable. It may be reprehensible, but it is intelligible. We believe that the explanation is the first step toward the remedy. Mr. Morgenthau does not speak of pogroms at all. In this, he sets an example that certain hysterical Jews ought to follow. The present series of articles in the Dearborn Independent is a pogrom. Some Jewish spokesmen speak of it as if each separate article were a pogrom. In the hectic but uninstructive oratory of Hebrew lodge meetings. But Mr. Morgenthau exercises more precision in the use of words. He says, quote, "The mission was purposely has purposely avoided the use of the word pogrom, as the word is applied to everything from petty outrages to premeditated and carefully organized massacres. On one point, all the reports agree, namely that the unjust killing of Jews has been on a scale so much smaller than that alleged by the propagandists that there is no comparison. In that part of Poland where war disorder was less common, 18 persons were unjustly deprived of their lives for the whole territory during the entire period when it was being overrun by various elements. Sir Stuart Samuel admits, apparently with reluctance, that he can only count 348. Captain Wright says, "I estimate not more than 200 or 300 have been unjustly killed. One would be too many, but taking their casualties as a standard with which to measure the excesses committed against them, I am more astonished at their smallness than their greatness." Sir H. Rumbold says, "If the excesses had been encouraged or organized by the civil and military authorities, the number of victims would probably have been much higher." That the reader may see how the various reports run with reference to specific charges of brutality, the agreements and divergences are set down. Look at the reports concerning what happened at Limburg. The excesses occurred November the 21st through the 23rd, 1918. The city was taken by Ukrainian troops, formerly in the Austrian service. All four wrote that, Samuel, Morgenthau, Wright, and Jadwin. Number two. General Monkunski raised a Polish army, about 1,500 in number, consisting of men, women, boys, some of them criminals, and after a severe struggle, succeeded in capturing half the city, and the other half of which remained in the occupation of the Ukrainians. That was from Samuel. Here's another quote. A few hundred Polish boys, combined with numerous volunteers of doubtful character, recaptured about half the city and held it until the arrival of Polish reinforcements on November the 21st. That was from Morgenthau. When the German troops revolted all over Poland at the time of the armistice, and the whole edifice of German organization fell to the ground in a day, a few Polish officers raised a small volunteer force in Lemberg, numbering between 1,000 and 2,000, which was composed of boys, roughs, and criminals, and even women in uniform. For nearly a fortnight, they fought in the streets against the Ukrainians, and on the arrival of a similar force, drove the Ukrainians out of town. This was really a splendid feat of arms. That was from Captain Wright. Number three, the Jewish part of the population of Lemberg declared itself to be neutral.
Mm-hmm.
That's from Samuel.
We don't fight, you know. We send others to die.
Here's from Morgenthau. The Jewish population declared themselves neutral, but the fact that the Jewish quarter lay within the section occupied by the Ukrainians and that the Jews had organized their own militia, and further, the rumor that some of the Jewish population had fired upon the soldiery, stimulated among the Polish volunteers an anti-Semitic bias that readily communicated itself to the relieving troops. Next one is from Captain Wright. During the struggle, the Jews proclaimed themselves neutral. But though I do not think they gave any armed assistance to the Ukrainians, their neutrality was highly benevolent to the Ukrainians and probably helpful. They thought the Ukrainians would win. Number four. This is from Samuel. In the result, none of the military commanders responsible for these events has been punished. The next one is, as early as December 24th, 1918, the Polish government, through the Ministry of Justice, began a strict investigation of the events of November the 1st, 21st, and 23rd. In spite of the crowded dockets of the local courts, there were over 7,000 cases are now pending. 164 persons, 10 of them Jews, have been tried for complicity in the November disorders, and numerous similar cases await disposal. 44 persons are under sentences ranging from 10 days to 18 months. Aside from the civil courts, the local court-martial has sentenced military persons to confinement for as long as 3 years for lawlessness during the period in question. That was from Morgenthau. Here's a quote from Jadwin. The government has inflicted a good deal, though an insufficient amount of punishment. These punishments it has never published for fear of Polish public opinion. And Brigadier General Jadwin of the United States Mission says, if complaints as to slowness and uncertainty of military and government punishments and relief were heard, as they were, it seemed nevertheless to indicate that orderly process of government was in operation. Here's from Samuel. No compensation has been paid for the damage done. This mission is advised that on the basis of official investigations, the government has begun the payment of claims for damages resulting from these events. That's from Morgenthau. Jadwin says, payments had begun to be made in Wilna, Pinsk, and Lemberg before our departure from Poland.
Now you will find that the Polish people, because the Jews, were so brilliant in commerce, they were the ones managing all of the money. Sort of like your country. So they were beginning to pay out. And I wish there was some way to just skip over part of this, because the important message I want you to get out of this is that 250 to 300,000 out of this one incident, Jews, were brought to America. And today, because of their being so afraid of what crazy Saddam is going to do, they are bringing thousands in every day into the United States. They don't have to pass go. They just collect their $200 without even going by go. in the Monopoly game. This is the Jewish homeland. You better hear it, citizens.
We could skip several pages here without losing very much.
Let's do, because they're going to get it in the paper.
Got the flavor.
And what we want to talk about are these other things. You know, when people start saying you're an anti-Semite and they start really putting you down, and there doesn't seem to be anywhere to turn. It's a little bit like Clinton. Why, I didn't do that. Well, you did something that allowed yourself to be set up, even if you didn't do that. But one or two of his shock, amazement, show and tells was real. He didn't do that. Well, you're getting blamed for stuff, and oh my goodness, you're narrow-minded and so forth. And they'll, you know, they'll bring the entire militia against you for being so anti-whatever it is you are. Well, partly anti-militia. Really anti-patriot movement. These are the things that just keep stirring up and stirring up and turning one against another. These are the things that with the Colonel Bogreitz at the helm will make people do crazy, crazy things in the name of patriotism or God and country. What I really resent is in the name of God when you are doing nothing but touting Yiddish. And without being offensive, the Mormon Church is a spin-off of the Talmudic religion. And don't let that Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints fool you.
Skipping several pages, it is sometimes forgotten here in the United States that for Poland, the war is not yet over. Probably, I should make a remark here that Poland was invaded by the Ukrainians and the Russians after the Russians were taken over by the Bolsheviks in 1917. This is going on in 1918. They were making their sweep across Eastern Europe and taking over Poland as well as other countries.
Prior to that, when you get into a little more history, you will find that a lot of those Khazarian tribes had filtered down, and many of them were in Poland. All of the European countries. So the Bolsheviks were just another branch of their brotherhood.
Poland is now a free nation on paper, but her freedom seems to be a day-to-day tenure, dependent on fighting. Bolshevism made serious inroads on her. Whenever the Bolshevik Red armies swept across Poland, the Jews met them with welcomes. This is no longer denied, even in the United States. It is explained by the statement that the Bolsheviki are more friendly to the Jews than are the Poles, a statement which readers of our recent articles on the Jewish character of Sovietism can well understand. When the Poles beat back the Reds, they commonly found that the Jews had already set up Sovietism, as if they had long awaited it and were well prepared. It is scarcely strange, therefore, that the Poles will still retain their suspicions. The Jews do not want to become Poles. That is the root of the present difficulty between the two peoples. Sir Stuart Samuel barely touches it. Quote, on several occasions, the resentment of the soldiery and civil population was aroused by the Zionists' claim to Jewish nationality, as opposed to Polish nationality. Mr. Morgenthau does a step further. Quote, This had led to a conflict with the nationalist declarations of some of the Jewish organizations which desire to establish cultural autonomy financially supported by the state. Mr. Morgenthau, you will observe, gives a wider peep into conditions. But the best description of the situation is given in the report of Captain Wright. Quote, there, the Jew party program in Poland is to have all Jews on a separate register. The Jews thus registered are to elect a representative body of Jews with extensive powers of legislation and taxation, e.g., it could tax for purposes of immigration. this body to be handed over to the Polish state, a proportionate amount of money to spend on Jewish charitable and financial institutions. Besides this separate organization, a number of sets proportionate to their numbers to be set aside in every local and in the national legislature. A sixth or seventh of the Polish Diet to be occupied only by Jews, to be elected only by Jews. Some Jews also demand separate law courts, or at least the right to use Yiddish as well as Polish in legal proceedings. This is the practical program, but the ambition to be to the advanced section is national personal autonomy, granted in the Ukraine by one of the ephemeral governments of the Ukrainian Central Rada, on January 9, 1918, and called the Statute of National Personal Autonomy, of which I have a copy. It organizes the Jews as a nation with full sovereign powers. The Ukrainian banknotes were printed in Yiddish as well as in Ukrainian.
Yiddish is not Hebrew. Keep it in mind.
People sometimes ask, where is the proof of the program of the protocols? It is everywhere the Jewish leaders have attained power and everywhere they are striving for power. Anton's comment is, and oh boy, have they succeeded in America like no place on earth.
You see, they didn't even have to use Yiddish. They went right ahead and used Latin on your dollar bill with all their symbols. And nobody notices, just thinks that's really pretty.
Protocols can be written out of Jewish rabbinical writings. They can be written out of Jewish tendencies in the United States. They can be written out of Jewish demands in the Balkans. They can be written out of Jewish achievements in Russia. They represent the Jewish program, ideal and real, at every stage of modern history. Do you ever hear of this Jewish program in Poland when you are invited to sympathize with the 250,000 Jews who are being brought from Poland to the United States? Will these people leave their ideas outside New York Harbor? Incidentally, Captain Wright's full investigation of the Jewish program may throw some light on the refusal of the American Jews to circulate his report, although it was attached to the report of Sir Stuart Samuel, which is being so widely circulated. However, that his government at home might fully understand the situation, Captain Wright draws an illustrative parallel. If the Jews in England, after multiplying their numbers by 20 or 30, demanded that the Jewish Board of Guardians would have extensive powers, including the right to tax for purposes of immigration, and that a separate number of seats would be set aside in the London County Council, the Manchester Town Council, the House of Commons, and the House of Lords, to be occupied only by Jews, chosen by Jews, that the President of the Board of Education should hand over yearly to the Jews such sums proportionate to their numbers, if some were to demand the right to have separate Jewish law courts, or at least to be allowed to use Yiddish as well as English in the King's Bench and Chancery Division, if the most advanced even looked forward to a time when Bank of England notes were to be printed in Yiddish as well as English, then they might well find public opinion, even in England, less well disposed to them. In view of this state of affairs, it cannot be regarded as a fact of minor significance that the Jewish investigators, who must have known all this, virtually concealed it, and that the other investigators brought it forth to general knowledge. Neither is it of minor significance that the Jewish press has absolutely suppressed these facts while pretending to give the results of the British mission's investigations. Insulting references have been made to Captain Wright's report in a Jewish publication of the better class because he made references to certain practices which are common among the Jews in Poland. It may be said, however, that the references made by Captain Wright are in great restraint compared with the number given in the recent book by Arthur Goodhart. Whether Mr. Goodhart is a Jew or not, the present writer cannot now say. He is a fellow of Corpus Christi College, Cambridge. He is, quote, lately captain, United States Army. He was transferred from the Army at the suggestion of Mr. Morgenthau to act as counsel for the mission. He says on page 161, quote, after dinner, Mr. Morgenthau attended a meeting of the B'nai B'rith Lodge, the only chapter of this Jewish organization in Poland. No branches had been permitted in Russia before the war, and it was a secret society and therefore illegal in the Tsar's empire. Major Otto and I, not being members, walked around to town. Mr. Goodhart has counsel of the...
Let me stop, because now I'm going to get everybody riled up about the Mormons. Oh, you hate the Mormons too. No. But in the Oriental countries, the word Mormon, M-O-R-M-O-N, means Satan, devil. So that when these little missionaries go over to, for instance, Japan, they're not allowed to use that word. Then they really come through with the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Now, what is wrong with that church? Nothing that isn't wrong with all the churches. But how do you know it was structured as a U.S. major branch of this Khazarian element? Because it is based on Masonic ritual. It is a secret organization. You see, you would not even be able to have a Mormon church as it's structured in Russia under the Tsar. These secret organizations were such troublemaking evil organizations, they were banned. And anybody who has ever experienced in the Masonic order recognizes that all of it, that they just play. They don't mean that stuff. You go in and you take this oath and, well, by the time you get to the 33rd degree, I want to tell you, it's serious. And you've got your presidents, and Billy Clinton is one of them. He is a 33rd degree Mason. I don't care what they tell you. And you see, they now can become a member of the Order of B'nai B'rith. It's a special secret organization for, quote, higher level Jews, so that they don't have to wear the Masonic sign on them. But they all belong. They're going to belong to one or the other. If you're an attorney, you're going to belong to one or the other, or you're not going to make it through the Bar Association very easily. And anymore, it gets harder and harder. And they have to go by secret handshakes and this sort of stuff. Why would a perfectly brilliant young man making it through law school, learning all the Talmudic law that's thrust upon him, not be able to get and pass the bar? Because they won't let him. He's not a member. If he joins the club and then he studies up, they'll let him in as an apprentice. So it just goes from one thing constantly to another. And so it is the secret organization. What goes on in the temple behind those closed doors, it's so damn secret that you can't talk about it. Well, I doubt very much. You know, you're going to hold some candles in your wedding ceremony. It's going to bind you to somebody in heaven. Come off it. That is an earthly perception. And maybe after you're married to that duck 25 years, you don't want to be married to him in heaven too. So it's personal property possession. But they got to do something in there. And you know, every starry-eyed couple, you know, don't let those stars get in your eyes, because it can be dangerous. You might end up married for eternity to this guy or her. And as far as that goes, so many of the Mormons that you're exposed to, I'd rather be married to the man than the woman any day. I mean, you've got some real restrictive characters here. But it's a secret organization. And who had these revelations? A Mr. Smith, who was a Mason. Read the history, people. Quit being so gullible as to give your lives and your souls to something you don't know anything about. And they will ban those books. Von Brody, a Mormon, wrote a book called No Man Knows My History. They banned it because it talked about things like the Mormon massacre. And I don't mean the Indians went in and massacred the Mormons. Just study history. documented truth. Well, I like them. Well, you go right ahead and like them. I highly recommend that you love them. Don't judge them because they're ignorant. But don't put yourself in that category. Well, I'm sure God wants me to love everybody, so I'm going to. Why don't you find out what you're talking about? Nobody is putting anybody down. We are talking historical documentation here. And I know that everybody thinks Brigham Young. Well, after all, he found the place in Salt Lake. Well, anybody could have found the place if they could have lasted long enough to get there. So let's not just dive off the deep end. Joseph Smith had revelations, and they sure did fit in with the Masonic order. And it sure was handy that he could work with the ones back in New York who were out of this sect. So just be careful. Go on, please.
Mr. Goodhart, as counsel of the American Mission, makes an excellent witness as to the kind of people who are coming in such large numbers to this country. But their sense of their own political importance and power is the principal point for Americans to consider. The peace conference did not tend to bring unity in Poland. It rather established a disunity for as long a period as the Treaty of Versailles remains to rule the world. The reader has just seen Captain Wright's description of what the Jews demanded. Let the reader now understand what the peace conference decreed. Poland is prohibited from having an election on Saturday. Poland is prohibited.
I bet you thought that you just had Saturday and Sunday off because it was a weekend. Saturday is a Jewish Sabbath. Go on.
Poland is prohibited from having a registration on Saturday. The Jewish Sabbath is established by law, and government and courts must govern themselves accordingly. Do what you like on Sunday. Order elections on Sunday, as the polls sometimes do, but not on Saturday. It is the Jews' Sabbath. Article 11. Jews shall not be compelled to perform any act which constitutes a violation of their Sabbath, nor shall they be placed under any disability by reason of their refusal to attend courts of law or to perform any legal business on their Sabbath. Poland declares her intention to refrain from ordering or permitting elections, whether general or local, to be held on a Saturday, nor will registration for electoral or other purposes be compelled to be performed on a Saturday. What the Bolsheviki did in Russia, the peace conference did in Poland, established the Jewish Sabbath. The people who saw this strange setting up of Jewish customs as a part of the law of the land, one of the authorities for such action being the President of the United States, are now flocking to the United States in large numbers. Is it unreasonable for them to believe that if the President of the United States could bind Poland to Jewish custom, it is all right to bind the United States too? Moreover, the Jewish separate schools were established by law in Poland. Poland's great trouble has resulted from her lack of schools in which all the population could imbibe Polish ideals expressed in the Polish language. The peace conference authorizes the continuance of that source of trouble. In Article 11, the Jews were mentioned. In Article 9, the term used is Polish nationals. The reader will save himself a great deal of misunderstanding in the perusal of European news if he will translate the clause, racial, religious, and linguistic minorities, to mean simply Jews. They are the minority that is at the bottom of most of the difficulty, and they are the minority most heard of. It was this minority that dominated the peace conference. Article 9. Poland will provide in the educational system in towns and districts in which a considerable proportion of Polish nationals of other than Polish speech are residents adequate facilities for ensuring that in the primary schools instruction shall be given to the children of such Polish nationals through the medium of their own language. in towns and districts where there is a considerable proportion of Polish nationals belonging to racial, linguistic, or religious minorities, these minorities shall be assured an equitable share in the enjoyment and application of the sums which may be provided out of public funds under the state, municipal, or other budgets for education, religious, or charitable purposes. But even that is not all. The Polish state is to hand over the money, but the Jews will distribute it. Quote, educational communities of Poland will, subject to the general control of the state, provide for the distribution of the proportional share of the public funds allocated to Jewish schools in accordance with Article 9. It is most amazing how racial minorities are dropped the moment money comes into view and the definite term Jew is substituted. More than all this, quote, the United States of America, the British Empire, France, Italy, and Japan, the principal allied and associated powers on the one hand and Poland on the other hand, together make up of all these special privileges not a national agreement on the part of hard-pressed Poland, but an international demand on the part of the League of Nations. Article 12 stipulates that all the agreements affecting racial, linguistic, and religious minorities, which is merely diplomatic camouflage for Jews, shall be placed under the guarantee of the League of Nations. This lifts the Jews in Poland completely out of Polish obligation. All they will have to do...
Okay, stop. The reason I wanted you to hold on to this thought is that there has been an amazing effort to just bury, quote, bury the League of Nations. Meant nothing, couldn't mean anything, and so forth. It has to mean something because these laws came to be under the League of Nations. And for you who are having inquiring minds, it was through the order coming forth from the League of Nations that qualified the Peruvian certificates when the United States took over Peru's debts. That was because of the League of Nations. So hold it in your hearts. All you're doing here is getting one fact after another to use to qualify where you can get funding to rebuild this world. They did it for themselves. Don't you see it? Well, what's sauce for that goose, Buster, is sauce for this gander. And we're going to do it. They can't longer just deny it. And the International Monetary Fund is having to acknowledge it, whether or not they like it. Well, they can't, without an act of Congress, approve interest. BS. They took the debt. They took the debt which included the interest. And guess what? They're buying up these contracts that are attached to nothing just to get rid of them. All those old certificates, they're buying up and retiring. And they don't really know what to do about ours. They really don't know what to do. It is giving them a global headache. Well, some people know what to do. But it sure takes a long time, but I guess maybe it'll be just perfect. But that's the importance to you of the League of Nations. They managed to manipulate the League of Nations, the peace treaties, everything to make them above everybody else. And nobody noticed. Because if you noticed, and you said, well, he's a Jew, you're an anti-Semite and they're being persecuted. And you just killed that one, you know. This is clever. But I'll tell you something. I've told you from the beginning, you're up against the prince of clever. The Antichrist. Satan himself. Lucifer himself. Whatever you want to call this fallen angel. Train these suckers. And they trained them off Orion, and they trained them off some of the others that you wouldn't even recognize the name. And it's a game. And as long as you can remember that, you're going to enjoy the game. Because there's no way that you can even get in jeopardy anymore. It's gone too far. People say, well, you know, surely they'd like to get rid of Dormant. Not nearly as much as Jason Brent would. Not nearly as much. It's gone too far. And it's the time to bring these things. And they know. They're expecting. They've been expecting. And, of course, the attitude is that the United States is now so filled to capacity at every level of government that there's no way to do anything about it. And in that instance, they're correct. But what does it require? It requires people waking up within their own racial structure. When the guys find out they're just Judean and they don't have a ticket like Jerry Falwell, who's a Zionist, and none of his Christian fundamentalists even understand they're serving Satan, they're not going to like it. Ignorance is blinding, and this is why they have had to make sure you don't find out. And guess what? Even back in these days, 1920 and 1921, and just before that, they were banning Shakespeare's work, The Merchant of Venice, because it's about a Jew. He rips everybody off. It's a delightful story. But they've taken it out of the schools, the universities. Now, what are they doing? They're saying, well, you can't just have, Caucasian and white authors. Fine, then bring in some good literature and get it into the schools. But you get it into schools in addition to whatever is considered a classic. Isn't that the way you do it? Do you say, oh, well, here is this Chinaman and he's written this book, and we declare it a classic? They want to clear out all of the classics that refer to any of this, and they will ban them and get rid of them. And then you see you're into your fourth generation. And those children have no way to know anything except what you tell them, that television tells them, and their teacher tells them. So anything that may be the slightest bit derogatory, they'll take out. And that means that they'll take out anything that is derogatory, for instance, to a black person, to make it look good. And hopefully stir it up in the interim so they go to war with each other. There's some exceptionally good books. Everybody should be required to read Mandingo. Well, you can't read that. That's an X-rated book. You damn right it's X-rated. And that's why I said you ought to read it. And it's just a good novel. But you read it with the right attitude, and I'll tell you, it'll make you sick. The blacks have had to come along and write under hidden cover so the Jews will publish it, and the Jews will print it, and the Jews will make motion pictures of it. And yet, who is suffering the most at the hands of these heads of state? The Jews. They've turned them into homosexuals to get AIDS, and they front the cause. The movie people look at them. They are drug addicts. They're getting rid of what can destroy them the most, and that's their own supposed people. Wow, there's an awakening coming. A real awakening coming. And it reminds me a little bit, this Yiddish stuff. You see, the blacks wanted a little bit of equal rights. They have a street language. And so let's get it into the schools. Let's have a dual language. Well, don't the blacks in the U.S. speak English? Well, but they've got their own street language. To me, that is an insult. So they have their street language. They speak English. What are you doing? You're putting them down into a minority class of uneducated people that cannot understand English. Wow, I'm telling you, there is a day of reckoning coming. And it's on its way, and it's galloping full speed ahead. Because somebody's going to start listening. And there's too much proof. They don't have to listen to some commander who shows up in 1989. And they try to make me something off of some spaceship and a fortune teller. Well, just how do you run those ships? It is so above your idea of anyone asking that, that how much time shall we take? I've been there and done that. I've met with Mr. Baruch. I met with your President Eisenhower. And I've met with a Jew who headed the Archdiocese of the Catholic Church in the United States. And I've tried to protect that. And I don't know how much longer I will make even an effort to do that. Everybody that I met with was out of this Khazarian tribe, and that's why we met. The time has come to meet.